The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If it seems like it's taking you longer to get around town or from L.A. to Orange County, commutes that used to be this or that, well, you're not alone. Some of the new numbers indicate that we in Southern California are in, well, the top worst rankings for transportation for the congestion. We're going to talk with Senior Research Engineer Bill Eisley. He's co-author of the Texas A&M Transportation Institute Urban Mobility Report.
Happy to be here.
Well, traffic is no stranger to Southern California, but it continues to get tougher and tougher. I see these stories about commute times taking longer, all sorts of reasons out there. But what did you look at this year, and how are we doing in Southern California?
Yeah, in Southern California, in Los Angeles specifically, the average delay per auto commuter is 119 hours. So you can kind of look at that as almost three full weeks, work week, stuck in traffic. And that's costing in wasted time and fuel over $2,400.
There's several reasons. I mean, when you talk to experts about this stuff, they'll say, well, it's so expensive to live in one area, people have to drive in from another. The fact that we have this outdated model where we all work from 8 to 4 or 5 puts us all in the same morning commute. What are the factors? What are the official factors at play here? Maybe no new highways in 20 or 30 years either, right?
It's a combination of things. There really isn't one cause of the congestion, so there isn't really necessarily one solution. If you think about what's happening, we have special events that cause issues. We have just too much traffic, which causes issues. We have weather. Not so much in L.A., but you do have some weather incidents that occur. You also have crashes, incidents. So it's a number of things beyond just too many cars.
There's also a desire. I was reading a story just the other day that it was in the Wall Street Journal that said, as the economy has gotten better, people save up their money and then they buy a car and no longer take the bus, putting more cars on the road.
Yeah, in the L.A. basin, you have a lot of transportation generators. We call them activity centers that are spread out throughout the basin. So you're right. It can be a challenge to get around. And, you know, as Americans, we tend to love our cars as well. And so it's difficult to part from them. I think it kind of boils down, all your listeners have been stuck in traffic before. So there's some really probably some good reasons why they're still doing that. In other words, they're paying out this $2,400 a year in wasted time and fuel, but there's probably some other reasons that require it at some level.
Yeah. And the payoff is that we're in Southern California, where it doesn't get 20 below like Minneapolis, things we do get out of being in an urban center like this.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, you have to make those decisions based upon the situation that you're in. So many of the decisions are driven by where we work, where we live, and where we play, or where we take our kids to school, medical appointments. If we are in the sandwich generation where we're also taking care of elderly family or friends, that also puts a strain on it because you have medical appointments or other places that you have to go to. And everybody's situation is different, and we've got over 10 million people making those decisions.
Yep, all at the same time. I noticed with school back in session, traffic patterns have changed. Certain freeway times in the midday seem like they've opened up. Moms that were running their kids around in the minivan aren't doing that because the kids are in school. So there are some things that kind of shift here. A lot of this information can be used by those to debate policy. I know in the news business and in talk radio, you know, this becomes fodder for the old argument, well, the politicians want to get us out of our cars, and so, you know, they've made a mandate not to build any new highways, any new freeway lanes, with all those tax dollars that are running in. And see, or look, they opened up driver's licenses to not only citizens, but in the last few years to those in the country illegally. And that's put hundreds of thousands of more cars on the road. I mean, people can take this traffic and use it to push whatever narrative they want.
They really can. And I think what I would also say on top of that is what we've seen with our nearly 40 years of data is that the congestion problem is still increasing, even though we're doing some of those things. So a bottom line from our report is we need more of everything. We need more of the large capacity projects. We need to provide more mobility options. We all need to think more about whether or not we need to take our trips and whether we could telecommute or take some other means. So it really takes all of that and more of it.
Yeah, and telecommuting is a great idea. I mean, and it really, with the internet, you can do a lot of stuff without having to head out. Why is it that business models haven't changed more? It seems as if with telecommuting, most of us could do what we do, unless we all have to gather. And even that, you could Skype in or some sort of WebEx conferences. Seems like we could get maybe half the folks off the freeways. But we don't. Is it because, you know, it's like our forefathers? I heard a story once that when you look at a mountainside and you see a trail on it, it's because years ago, one goat went this way over the, literally over the hill, right? And wore the path and the others just follow. I mean, it's very difficult to build new freeways. Getting zoning and rights of way and the billions of dollars, it's the inertia is to not build more, isn't it?
Well, it's difficult, and of course, it's a local decision on what makes the most sense. You know, we're in a democracy, and we need to have stakeholder engagement and sort of everybody on board. So it does become a political issue at times. And so I would just say what we have to do is a little bit of more of everything. You know, those large capacity projects, whether it's transit, bus, rail, or even widening the road, take decades to put in place, and we can't wait that long. Mm-hmm. So there's things we have to do in the near term, but at the same time, we can't not do that in the future. We've got to do that as well.
Does the Texas A&M Transportation Institute Urban Mobility Report look at some of the latest affectations that have come along? There has been a real push to put in bike lanes at the expense of traffic lanes for vehicles. We've seen that competition start to emerge here in Southern California. Certain people have been able to push the greening message to the point where, hey, I see cars now backed up for blocks because we've taken away traffic lanes, and then you have like this empty bike lane. I mean, you've got issues like that that would be interesting to measure.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a local issue that frequently comes up is this, you know, what's the right mix of solutions and what's the right mix for non-motorized versus motorized? Are people going to stop their commutes from Thousand Oaks into Los Angeles and start to take a bike? I doubt it. But, you know, there's some of those more close, more central trips that you can look at some of those non-motorized alternatives. But with the sprawl that we have and the activity centers, particularly in the L.A. Basin, it's going to be difficult to have some of those things work everywhere.
Then you've got the disruptors. I'm looking at the technologies that are coming along to see what's going to change all this, if any. Like if you look in some of the urban centers, you see all these electric scooters that have now been deployed, you know, mm-hmm. by companies like Lyft or Lime or whatever they are. And they're mm-hmm. on every corner, and you see people buzzing around on these things, sometimes on the sidewalk when they shouldn't be. But you see these disruptors come along. Is there anything in the mobility future that is going to be the disruptor that's going to change things?
Oh, there's so many disruptors that we see on the verge right now. A lot of it relates to what's going to happen with truck patterns and the trucking industry in the future. You know, our congestion costs also include, you know, those impacts on trucks. I don't think a lot of people think about it or realize the impact of everything they buy. As locations get larger, in terms of population, of course, we have the congestion, but then we also have to feed all those people, and those people buy stuff, and a lot of times that comes on a truck. So there's a lot of things in the trucking area that I think we could see that could be disruptors. For example, what happens if 3D printers start to become a little bit more commonplace, and we don't need to ship all the stuff, but we could just make it somewhere? There's a potential disruptor, and there's many more.
Yeah. In the big concept disruptors, there are folks talking political strategy in the future, you know, the so-called Green New Deal, where they want to do away with fossil fuels. That could be a major disruptor. Maybe not so much in a good way, but there are things like that in the big picture down the line.
Yeah, there's big ideas being talked about at the national level, and you know, we'll just have to see how some of those things play out to see how they may trickle down into the local economies.
Yeah, but I remember, and I've been doing this for a number of years, one of our previous governors had said something like, you know, the era of highway building has ended, and this was like 20, 25 years ago, referring to, you know, when they did the groundbreaking on the last freeway. And there really haven't been new freeways in California or very many efforts to double-deck them. What does it take to get things changed, to get – do you think people need to – and there's so many millions of drivers. If they were to organize and have their will be heard just as some other industries who use our highways or the environmental lobby uses their voice, it seems like there'd be a massive potential – to force our lawmakers to make major highway improvements and build more lane miles. But it doesn't seem to be happening. It's almost like drivers are a disorganized group. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting because all those conversations, I can assure you, are occurring throughout Southern California and all of our major urban areas with the local planning agencies. These are the things as they develop their local plans, 5-year plans, 20-year plans. These are all the things that they're talking about. So I would encourage those commuters to organize and show up at those meetings and have your voice heard in those discussions, because I assure you that they're occurring.
And then there are voices on the other side that are going to those meetings, mobility reports that really are talking about taking lane miles away, greening communities, more bike lanes. There are people who want to make it worse for us on the road and kind of push us into other forms of transportation. So unless our voices are heard, there are competing voices working at it that are at those meetings now, right?
Yeah, I think they're, you know, everybody's in there in those discussions, and just about anything is possible and on the table, and I think we all need to take advantage of that. I think my bottom line point with all of that would be if somebody's trying to say that one solution is going to do it or their idea is the one that's going to fix it, that's not the case. What we really need is, again, more of everything, all the topics we've talked about.
Bill, thank you so much. Co-author of the Texas A&M Transportation Institute Urban Mobility Report. Once again, Southern California, one of the worst spots on that commute time. Appreciate your time with us. Take care now.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.